What is up, college baseball fans? Welcome to episode 9 of the 11.7 podcast brought to you by Foul Pole Sports. We have a lot of Friday night action to recap, and we're going to preview the rest of the weekend, including we're going to talk about some perfect game that happened. We're going to talk about pretty much all, and we had a couple upsets. We had a team play baseball for the first time in 40 years. You guys stick with us. We have a fun show planned, and let's go. It is Saturday, February 22nd, and we are into the second weekend of the college baseball season, and it didn't take too long for us to have our very first perfect game of the year. We had Duke's Bryce Jarvis, which is an amazing name, by the way.
Big game Bryce.
Throws a perfect game with 15 punch-outs today against Cornell. And although Cornell's not the strongest team,
they were up late studying.
Yeah, they were up late studying last night for their Friday exams. But, no, Dimitri, how impressive is it to throw a perfect game with 15 punch-outs since you were an old college pitcher? Just kind of take us through, like, the focus level you got to have. Because I don't care what anybody says. If you're a pitcher, you know exactly if you have a no-hitter going, a perfect game, all of that. There's never a time when you're not thinking about it. Am I right?
Honestly, if you get through the first two innings no-hit, you're not really thinking about it. But once, like, the fourth, fifth inning rolls around, it starts peeping into your head, like, oh, shit. Like, I got a perfect game going. I got a no-no going. A lot of guys talk about how, you know, like, pitchers have their routine where they go in the dugout, they put their jacket on, they get a drink of water, whatever they do, put a dip in, whatever they do, and sit by themselves, or they joke around. Personally, me, I always like to be on the fence or walking around talking to pitching coach, talking to teammate, talking to catcher, just kind of chit-chatting. Because I hate to sit there and think about the game. I hate sitting there, like, in silence talking about it. But for big game Bryce, it's impressive. I mean, to throw 15, have 15 punch out in a CG, that means your pitch count's incredible. Because you're throwing 45 strikes just on strikeout. 27 outs on other 12 or whatever. Not sure how many pitches he threw.
I think it was 92 pitches, I think I saw when I was researching it.
That means he absolutely just ran through, mowed down their lineup. Not a lot of deep count. Just from the numbers, he got ahead early. I don't care who you did it against, whether it's Cornell. I don't care who you did it against. A bunt single breaks up. No. So –
yeah, no, if you think about it, one bad pitch, if you peg a batter, I mean, that breaks up the perfect game. If one bad defensive play, that breaks up a perfect game. That's why perfect games are so rare at any level. It doesn't matter who you're playing against. Just one little mistake breaks up the perfect game. And let me tell you, I mean, I didn't get to watch any of this game because it kind of just flew under the radar. And all of a sudden, I saw a bunch of tweets saying, you know, Bryce Jarvis throws perfect game, 15 Ks. And it's like, hold up, that's big time news. Let me go back and look. And I mean, dude, from what I understand, like, this guy, he's a big league arm. He's got a Major League Baseball name, Bryce Jarvis. Like, I can see him coming out, throwing, like, being like a number two or three starter for some contender in the major leagues in 5 years. That's a guy that, you know, he basically put the team on his back today. And Dimitri and I were talking about it before the show. Last year, the first perfect game that was thrown was by Jake Kuchmanner of East Carolina. And we immediately got him on the show the next day. So, Bryce Jarvis, if you're listening, you have an open invitation to come on this show because I know our listeners want to hear you talk about it, and we're just super impressed with you, man. So this is your invitation.
Hey, speaking of no-hitters and perfect games, Ole Miss had a three pitchers combined for a no-hitter with Doug Nikhizi shoving again.
Yeah, the booger eater. If you guys remember last year in the regional, Doug Nikhizi, freshman, he tore it up last year. Got a little bit of off-the-field trouble before the season started, but even last week against Louisville, I thought he looked really good and bounced back this week. He's in a very important piece for Ole Miss this year because he's going to be competing against guys on Friday night every single week, And we've already talked about some of the SEC Friday night guys, like Connor Noland and Emerson Hancock. And I don't know if Kumar Rocker from Vanderbilt's thrown on Fridays this year. It doesn't look like it, but there's a ton of great SEC arms, and Doug Nikhazy is gonna be the key to whether they go into Saturday up a game on the series or down a game.
How about at Arkansas, freaking chanting booger eater?
Oh yeah, no, that's just good for the sport. And I don't know Doug Nikhazy, but I know that that didn't bother him one bit. Like, he's just that kind of guy that's very...
His trouble, he obviously did not get bothered by too many things. And guess what that usually means? That usually means they'll separate the good one from the great one.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's in the great category. If shit doesn't bother him and he just steps on the mound and just...
That's what you want in a pitcher. That's what you want in a Friday guy.
Guy that don't care. Guy that get on the mound and don't care.
Yep. Those are the best guys to play behind as well, like as far as teammates go. So, yeah, Ole Miss absolutely railed Xavier today, 13-0, combined no-hitter. Another game I really want to touch on early. Dude, I know you watched a lot of this game. I don't know if you watched the whole thing, but how about Christian Chamberlain from Oregon State?
That's my guy right there. Hey, that is my guy.
Standing 5'10", 173. Lefty, pumping 94, 95, making Mississippi State hitters look clueless.
What was it, 12 Ks and 5 and a third? He had 12 Ks through 5, just absolutely dealing. Yeah,
with the most swagger walk I've ever – I mean, a comparison to, like, Conor McGregor walk. Like, this guy knew what he was doing. He wasn't scared of the moment. He wasn't scared pitching at Duty Noble Field. Like, Christian Chamberlain, I was super impressed with him. And I'll be honest with you, when I saw him throwing in the first inning – I was like, dude, they're going to tee off on this little lefty. Like, no way this is their Friday guy. And about three pitches later, I was like, oh, he's hitting 93, 94. What is up with this? And if he would have pitched the whole game, Mississippi State would have not had a shot. But shows a lot from a Mississippi State team today who JT Ginn was out with a sore arm, which we'll touch on here in a little bit because I actually want to talk about that a little bit. But to rally, you know, down 2-0 in the bottom of the eighth, come back and score a six spot with, I can't pronounce his name, but Brandon Pimentel. Pimentel, right?
Pimentel.
Brandon Pimentel hits a go-ahead homer, and the Mississippi State Bulldogs come away with a win, which if you would have asked them in the fifth, sixth inning, are you guys going to win this game? They probably would not have been confident in it because they had nothing at the plate. They were kind of like Johnny Holstaff in it. I think they ended up throwing four or five pitchers. That's one of those games that against that caliber of opponent, you love walking away with those wins because for 80% of the game, they had no shot.
You want to get a quote from Lemonis today?
Yeah, I do.
Hey, Lemonis, the Greek brother.
He's a Greek brother of yours?
He's a Greek brother of mine. But quote from him today. As they got late in the game, he said the dude effect took over.
The dude effect. Those fans were rowdy, that's for sure. And when that homer went over the fence in right field, The whole outfield just exploded. You could see the pure joy on those fans because they thought they were going to lose that game. I know they did. But
anyway,
dude, let's talk a little bit about JT Ginn because I have some opinions. So JT Ginn dealt with some arm issues last year, if I remember correctly, and coming into his sophomore year, but he's draft eligible, I believe, because his age kind of falls in that range. I think he's going to turn a lot of big league clubs off. You know, he can't even pitch every 7 days because he has arm soreness.
He ain't going to pitch every 5 days.
He's going to have to pitch every 5 days in pro ball. So I'm not saying he's going to drop severely in the draft, but I am saying that a lot of teams are going to be turned off from that and kind of question his durability because that's the big thing with professional arms is they want them either completely healthy or already had the Tommy John surgery and looking at round two. So he's kind of in that in-between phase where he might have some damage to his arm that hasn't been fixed yet. So we're going to look forward to watching him pitch the rest of the year, but he's got to be able to bounce back every 7 days. Like, that's just very important to his draft stock.
Absolutely. I mean, dude, when you get into pro ball, I mean, even for me, it took me a little bit to get used to throwing every day or throwing every 4 days, every 5 days. It's not easy. It's an adjustment you have to make. That's why a lot of college arms, a lot of starting college arms go to rookie ball, and they don't pitch every 4 days until about a month, month two into their season. They start adjusting them into it.
Yeah, they have to.
You really have to learn how to get in the weight room, learn how to get in the training room, learn how to prepare your body to be ready every 5 days, because you don't have old college pitching coach putting you on a program. You're on your own.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just a whole new ballgame once you get to pro ball. But we'll definitely keep up with him all year just to see how his arm bounces back. And I think it was one of those – it was probably more of it's really early in the year, so we're going to save him, not push anything. I think if this was a super regional or College World Series game, I think he absolutely throws today. So I don't think it's anything to worry about, but – I'm just saying that there's a chance that they're going to question his durability if the draft comes, if he's still kind of like this. So
I'm not calling anybody out right now, but if this is May and you need SEC win, you better get your ass out there.
Oh, absolutely.
You better take him out, open Advil, throw some Red Hot on there. You got to be ready to go, buddy.
Yeah, and I think once he gets out there moving around, his adrenaline will kick in and he'll be fine. Might be a little sore the next day, but whatever. Anyways, dude, I can't believe we waited this long to talk about the biggest series of the year so far with Miami and Florida, and that game did not disappoint.
What a game.
What a game. Ended up going into extra innings, but I know you watched the whole thing because I did too. Miami should have never been in a position to go into extra innings because Villar at shortstop makes a costly error.
They made a few, man. They made a few errors that were.
Yeah, but I'm saying about the bases loaded line drive right back at him. Makes a bad throw to the second baseman, which was a clear double up. And that was how Florida scored their only run for the first nine innings, was that one error.
And then freaking guy bunts the guy over to second. Florida throws into his back. They call him out for runner interference, which that, by the way, happened last year. I don't remember exactly the situation, but it was the same.
It happened with Louisville, I think. I think it was Louisville in the College World Series, right?
Yes, you might. I think you're right.
I remember it was a big game. I think it might have been Louisville, Mississippi State, possibly. I don't remember exactly who it was, but for some reason that's coming across my mind. But that's just one of those rules. That's one of those rules that needs to have very clear.
I mean, he was clearly in fair ground, whatever you want to call it. The call was right, but the ball, even if he was in the baseline, the ball would have hit him. And guy would have been on first and third, nobody out. Instead, it was man on first, one out. Change the game right there, because Miami would have won.
Oh, I agree. And so that's just, I mean, going back to it a little bit, that's one of those rules that's very subjective, because I know there's sometimes where if the throw is into the runner, and even if he's like in the baseline, they still call him out. And then there's sometimes where he's clearly not in the baseline and they don't call him out. So it's one of those very subjective rules that you never really have a clear answer on it. It's up to the umpire's discretion. So, yeah, that did kind of suck seeing that unfold like that. But, dude, all in all, how about like the
– How about let's rewind a little bit. Brian Van Bell versus Tommy Mace.
Yeah, dude, that's exactly where I was going to. Tommy Mace was as emotional as I've seen him since he got to Florida.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was screaming, boom.
He was dropping some hard F-bombs the whole day. Like, he was getting pumped. The crowd was electric the whole night. Van Bell was another guy that, I mean, he looks like a big league arm. Like, very good changeup command. Good
changeup was incredible.
Yeah, good feel on the mound, too. Like, he just looked like an athlete. And the ball just kind of jumps out of his hand different. But what a matchup between those two starting pitchers. They both came ready to play. And although the wind was blowing in pretty hard from left field and there were some deep flyouts, I mean, the hitters for the most part had no chance. Like, those guys were on their A game, and I loved every bit of it.
Van Bell went seven innings, one walk, 9K. Tommy Mace went seven innings, one run, two walk, 8K. 17 Ks between the two of them over 14 innings.
And that's why this series
in the country right there.
Yeah, that's why this series is, in our opinion, number one versus number two, because I don't know if there's any teams out there that have really shown this early how competitive they are, how like fiery they are. I thought both teams played with a lot of passion, and I know they're not technically like in conference rivals, but for the state of Florida, they're very big rivals, and they both have high expectations this year. I was super impressed with both squads, and I'm excited for tomorrow and Sunday. I mean, I think this is going to be just like that for all three games.
Yeah, Miami's in a tough spot. They used their closer for 2-3 inning. They're going to have to find – they need to score tomorrow.
So is their closer the lefty that came in, or was it the big righty in the
eighth? Daniel Fetterman.
Okay. I mean, I thought all of their bullpen arms looked good too.
Yeah. No, they all look good, but big righty with their closer.
That's the cool thing. Their bullpen was so good, I couldn't tell who their closer was. Like, yeah. I didn't know who they had set up as their closer because I thought all the guys had very electric stuff.
Hey, speaking of that game, you know what pissed me off?
What's that?
Miami calling pitches to the pitcher's wristband.
Dude, the wristbands have got to go.
Gotta go.
I know it, some people like them, but I think a majority of college baseball players and fans don't like them.
Dude, teach your catcher how to catch a call a game. Get on the rubber, stare. I mean, it's you and the catcher. You don't need to be looking at your dugout. I mean, don't tell me pace of play and all that stuff. Don't give me that. Get on the rubber.
What's the argument for pace of play? I feel like it slows the game down.
I mean, come on. And you're talking about crossing them up? We'll figure it out.
Well, I think it also gives the pitcher a bigger chance to cross up the catcher because you got four eyeballs looking at the coach instead of just two.
Way too many logistics working. You have way too many different things working there.
Yeah, I mean,
he looked down at the number.
Let me ask you this: Do you think the catcher also puts a sign down, or does he just see? Wow, dude, that's unbelievable. I mean, I feel like if I'm the catcher, I want the pitcher to see what I'm putting down, so he knows that I know what's coming. You know what I mean? Like,
the pitcher and the catcher are on the same page, not the damn pitching coach.
Yeah. I'm always a big advocate for catchers calling their own game.
If I were the college pitching coach or whatever, if I'm a pitching coach, I'm teaching my catcher how to call a game. We're going over the scouting report day before, during the week. I'm going over the whole Florida. So if I'm Miami, I am scouting reporting the whole entire Florida lineup, right?
Right.
I'm telling my catcher the tendencies, all that stuff. The catcher is going to call the game. The catcher is a clone of the pitching coach.
I also think the catcher has good feel behind the plate of, you know, whether the batter looks comfortable in the box. Like maybe.
Absolutely. He sees the swing the best.
If
you make your adjustments, you know your scouting report, their strengths and weaknesses.
And he knows the umpire as well, too. Like, the pitching coach has the worst angle for inside or outside pitches, you know, even up and down in the zone. The catcher has a way better feel what the umpire is going to call. That's why I'm always a big fan of, like, even if your catcher is 19 years old, he should know how to call a game, and I'm sure he did it in high school. But these wristbands have just got to go. It's just a bad look.
I mean, leave that for the quarterbacks.
Leave it for the quarterbacks. Or maybe even, at the very least, like the outfielders, I can see wearing them. Maybe having the coach show them where to line up and stuff like that. But
I mean, I understand, you know, they're giving up a number, and the whole field looks at it, and they know what pitch it is. But all you really need to do as an infielder or outfield is read the catcher's in and outs.
Yeah.
And then if you go off speed, a coach can, you know, give your signal.
I just didn't know until last week that was a thing in college baseball, that they're allowing it this year. And it was one of those rules that kind of snuck by people. Like, I didn't hear anybody talking about it until last week.
No. But, yeah, I mean, that's my opinion on it. Those things got to go. Teach your catcher how to catch a ball game.
Yeah, I would say over half the teams that I've watched on TV use them. So that's a much bigger number than I thought. And I don't know. I think by next year, I think a lot of teams won't use them. I think there's going to be a lot of cross-ups between the catcher and the pitcher, but that's just what I think. I don't know. Personally, if I was a head coach, I would not allow that. Just as like a pride thing. It makes you look like you don't – like, it makes your players look like they're not confident out there. They don't know what they're doing. They have to rely on the coach. Let the kids go out there and play. They know – they have at least a good sense of what's going on.
Absolutely.
So, anyways, we're going to move on to – we haven't talked about Boise State yet, have we? Boise State did the right thing and brought their baseball program back after 40 years. And who do they open up with? Nobody else besides one of the biggest powerhouses college baseball has ever seen, the Texas Longhorns, which is a great just step right into it. We haven't played in 40 years. We got a brand new team. Let's play against the Texas Longhorns, who have one of the best traditions in college baseball. And they ended up getting shut out, which, you know, after 40 years, they still haven't scored a run. So maybe tomorrow they'll break that streak. But I'm just happy that that university decided to invest in college baseball. I was looking at the roster, and the roster comes from basically like a ton of junior college guys. They have a kid from South Korea.
Freshman last year, they're like a practice season, and they're all redshirt freshmen.
Yeah, they even have a kid from South Korea, which is really cool. So,
hey, speaking of Boise State, do you think the baseball field's blue?
Dude, I was just thinking that, and I hate myself because I was gonna Google that and figure it out, but I never did. I assume it's got to be blue, right?
I'm looking right now.
All right. Well, while you look, we can talk a little bit about green. How Louisville kind of still looks shaky. They only win a 3-0 game against Valparaiso. And a lot of you are thinking, what in the world is a Valparaiso? I think it's a school somewhere in the Midwest. And
Indiana.
So Louisville wins 3-0 after losing last week's series to Ole Miss. And then they lose to Wright State midweek. If they didn't have Reed Detmers on the mound, I'm not quite sure that they would even win tonight. Reed Detmers, first-team All-American, absolute dominant left-handed pitcher. He went 6 innings, 14 Ks. That's how dominant he was. And Louisville wins 3-0. But, again, that's one of those games that if you're going to be preseason ranked number one in the nation, you got to at least win this game by 5-6 runs to, like, get your team confidence up. And I don't know if they win this game without Reed Detmers on the mound. I really don't. And so that was kind of
I'm sure they do, but come on, man.
It's still early, and I know that. And I know a lot of people kind of got on to me the last episode for the midweek saying Louisville's a bunch of fakes and this and that. But obviously, I mean that lightheartedly. I think Louisville's still very talented. They got two of their best hitters out of the lineup with hamate bone injuries. So we'll see. We'll see at the end of the year what they end up being. But right now, I'm not impressed with Louisville. Another team I'm not impressed with, and we kind of just roasted them on Twitter. The LSU Tigers dropped back-to-back games, one in the midweek to Nicholls State, and then they come back at home Friday and get shut out by Eastern Kentucky of the Ohio Valley Conference. That's a bad loss, Dimitri. That's like a really bad loss. At home on Friday night, losing 2-0, can't push a run across on your home field. If I'm an LSU Tiger fan, I'm kind of pushing the panic button.
Ugly loss, man. I don't care if it's Friday night. I mean, Eastern Kentucky might have had a decent arm on the mound. I didn't catch that game. But from what I'm looking at right now, that just can't happen.
I mean, it can't. And sure, like we'll give some props to Eastern Kentucky. But honestly, LSU lost that game more than Eastern Kentucky won it. I watched the last five innings of it.
I agree. But at the same time, to go into Baton Rouge, Alex Box, you got to play flawless.
Yeah, you really do. But, and another thing,
that's a program-changing win.
Yeah, another thing, it might have been because they were losing, but when they showed the crowd in the 7th and 8th inning, it was practically empty in Alex Box Field. And I don't know what the weather is like. I wasn't there. It might have been 30 degrees and rainy. Didn't really look like it on TV, but it could have been. It was like an embarrassing crowd. Like, if I'm Eastern Kentucky, I would have been super unimpressed with what everybody talks about as one of the best college baseball atmospheres. There was nobody in the stands. And it might have been because there was bad weather, or maybe because fans were mad because they weren't scoring runs. But I don't know. I'm very disappointed in LSU right now. I'll tell you that. Someone tweeted at me today and said, go ahead and cancel LSU. Go ahead and cancel them like you did Ole Miss last year. I'm thinking about it. I'm thinking about canceling LSU. Maybe Louisville, too. One of those two teams, they're in danger. They might get canceled for the year.
That is a bold move.
It is, but we'll see.
Hey, you want to know what I really want to talk about?
What's that?
The American Athletic Conference tonight.
Whew, what a day for them.
So, 4 top 25 wins for the conference today. UConn beat Michigan for the second time in a row, actually, in another –
Yeah, didn't they beat them in Arizona on Sunday, and then they played today in Florida against each other?
Yep.
Back-to-back games, both away from home for both teams, and one on one side of the country, the other on the other side of the country. That's crazy scheduling.
UCF, 3-1 win at Auburn in the plane. They beat Tanner Burns. How about UCF Friday night guy, Colton Gordon, 6 shutout with 7 Ks, no walk.
He's a friend of the program. He follows us and interacts with us quite a bit, huh?
Yep. And then Houston put a shellacking on Stanford in the Round Rock Classic, 11-4.
I think Stanford's really bad. I think they're very bad.
I don't think they're very good either. They are 1-4 on the year, 2 losses against Cal State, Fullerton midweek against Santa Clara, and then a blowout against Houston. Then Tulane, just that game just went final a little bit ago, 1-0 over Cal State, Fullerton. Listen to this, Bim. Friday night guy, Brandon Oldhoff, 16K complete game, 2-hitter shutout.
Wow. Against Cal State Fullerton, that's really impressive because
16K CG shutout.
Cal State Fullerton traditionally has never been really the team that strikes out a lot. They tend to put the ball in play, play some small ball, work the count deep. That's big time. 16 Ks?
Third most in Tulane history.
Wow. And Tulane looked pretty good against Louisiana Lafayette in midweek. I think they swept Florida Gulf Coast the week the weekend series.
Undefeated.
Yeah, they're undefeated, and they've beaten some really, you know, pretty, I'm not going to say really good teams, but some pretty good teams. And so they might be one of the favorites to, you know, watch out for in the American. But like you said, there was a lot of good wins for that conference. Houston beating Stanford in that Round Rock tournament, that's a good win. UCF going to Auburn, beating them on the road, and against an All-American arm in Tanner Burns, that's a good win. UConn beating Michigan, who everybody's hyped up about right now, that's another good win. The American Conference has always been good, but this might be the year where we're talking more than just East Carolina, because I know East Carolina is still the favorite to win that conference, but we're going to have 6 or 7 teams that are going to be competing for a championship.
Oh, absolutely.
And then we're going to talk a little bit about another All-American arm, Emerson Hancock, for a little bit. He bounced back after having a pretty rough outing last week on opening day. Comes back today, 7 innings pitched, 2 hits, 8 Ks, exactly what Georgia needed against a pretty solid Santa Clara team who traveled across the country to play Georgia. Georgia wins 9-0, but that's what you want out of your All-American Friday night guy. Emerson Hancock looked pretty shaky last week, bounced back this week. I'm sure his stuff felt better to him. Maybe he was a little rusty, but he's a big piece to Georgia, just like Doug Nikhazy is to Ole Miss. Like, those guys have got to get their programs win Friday night to give them a better chance to win the series. And then moving even deeper into SEC, Dimitri, I know we already roasted him on Twitter, but what happened to South Carolina's baseball program? The 2010, 2011 back-to-back College World Series champs, they're losing Friday night games to Northwestern at home?
Northwestern, probably their first game outside, to be honest.
I mean, yeah, that's not a bad take. It might be. And that's just never been a good baseball program.
I mean, South Carolina was, 4-0 coming in tonight? But I'm sorry, I don't see Northwestern Friday night guy being better than South Carolina's Friday night guy. It should never happen.
Yeah, and I know South Carolina's kind of dealing with the injury bug a little bit. I don't remember exactly who's hurt, but I know there's like 3 guys that are supposed to play important pieces that have been, like, one's out with a hamstring, one might have had Tommy John. I don't know. I know there's a bunch of stuff going around with injuries with South Carolina.
Don't get me wrong. They're probably going to come back and win the series, and it'll all be all right. But right now, tonight, today, yesterday, whatever you want to call it, that's a bad loss.
Yeah, they're waking up a little nervous because I know that they're going to bed tonight thinking, uh-oh, like, not this again. We got to get better. So that's kind of what's going on in the SEC right now. Arkansas looked really good against Gonzaga today, and they looked good yesterday too. They played a Thursday afternoon game against Gonzaga. It was pretty close for the long time, but then Arkansas ended up pulling away, winning it. That lineup looks real scary. Heston Kirk said, do what?
Long Beach.
Yeah, Long Beach also dominated Wake Forest today, I believe, right? 6-2. Wake Forest confuses me. They have a really good offense, and they're supposed to be really competitive in the ACC, but then they go and lose games already this year that they should not be losing. I think Wake Forest is way more talented than Long Beach.
Long Beach might be – I think they're going to be pretty good this year. I mean
– Well, they were awful last year.
Hey, speaking of West Coast, UCLA, 5-0 they've given up four runs all year.
Yeah, that pitching staff's, I mean, that's just every year. They're going to have a really good pitching staff. They're like the West Coast, them and Vandy, you know, kind of East Coast, West Coast, even though Vandy's not really on the East Coast. But you know what I'm saying? Like, one side of the country, they get their pitchers. The other side of the country get all the other pitchers. They're going to be fun again this year. Hopefully we see them in Omaha. But I just haven't really been impressed with West Coast baseball lately as much as I felt like I was when I was growing up. I know Cal State Fullerton's going to be good this year. I know Long Beach State's going to be better. But teams like Stanford and, you know, Cal loses today to – who'd they lose to, Dimitri? I know we just looked at it.
Cal lost to
St. John's, right?
Cal lost to St. John 10-6.
See what I mean? Like, there's teams on the West.
John's looking pretty good, though.
Who is?
St. John.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're always usually pretty good. They get some good recruits from the North.
I don't think people remember about a little longer than 5 years ago. But St. John's used to be a powerhouse.
Yeah, with like Joe Panic, and
they were a powerhouse.
They had a couple major leaguers on some teams. So yeah, I mean, St. John's is good, but they traveled across the country to play Cal, and Cal is supposed to win that game, in my opinion. But yeah, so I just haven't really been too impressed with West Coast baseball as much as I was when I was younger. That's the only thing I'm really getting at. But who knows? It's a long season, and I know I've been proven wrong quite a few times in the past. So. This is probably going to be one of those times where I'm proven wrong. There was a topic I wanted to talk about, and it just literally slipped my mind. It had to do with maybe UCLA. Oh, no, I know what it was. I know exactly what it was. If you guys didn't keep up with the Nebraska versus San Diego game today, you guys are lucky, because it was an absolute roller coaster, and it just wrapped up like right before we started the show. But Nebraska was up 7-0. And then they commit a couple errors in like the fifth inning, give up four, and then they score four or three. So it's 10-4 in like the seventh inning, and their bullpen just completely falls apart. Hit by pitches, walks, errors. It was a disaster. And Nebraska blows a 10-4 lead in the seventh and eighth by giving up a combined like 6 runs. I think the final score was eight runs. 5 in the 7th, 3 in the 8th to lose 11-12. And Nebraska, I know they score a bunch of runs this year. Their pitching staff and their bullpen is god-awful. At least it has been so far this year. And I know the Big Ten's not the best conference, but this year it's going to be very, very good, like compared to recent years, because you got Michigan, you have Iowa. Ohio State's supposed to be pretty decent this year, even though I think they're highly overrated. Indiana's always good. Minnesota is going to be very, very good this year. So if you're Nebraska and you were a couple bad breaks from making the Super Regional last year, you got to figure out this bullpen, because losing these games like that, that's tough. It puts a lot of pressure on your offense to keep doing what it's doing.
No, I agree. Ben, I got to point something out that I wanted to mention earlier.
Okay.
So we got asked a couple days ago who our top five college guys were for the draft. And, you know, I named Nick Gonzalez, Emerson Hancock, Austin Martin, and I put Asa Lacy in there. Lefty Friday night guy from Texas A&M.
Yeah, no, he's a beast.
You want to know what he did tonight?
He pitched against Army, right?
Oh, he didn't just pitch against Army. He went 5 innings, 14 Ks, up to 98.
Oh. What was A&M's lefty? What was their Friday guy from last year that was really good?
John Dokakis.
Yeah, I remember I can never pronounce his name. John Dokakis. Asa Lacy's better than what he is last year. Absolutely.
14 out of the 15 possible outs were by the punch out.
He's a big, intimidating guy, too, from the left side.
Dude, 98 in the left side.
And A&M just continues to keep scoring runs. They score another 9 tonight after scoring 30. Was it 27 or 30? They scored 30 on Wednesday night, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that offense is a lot better than what people gave them credit for preseason. A&M is one of those sleeper teams in the SEC, like they always are. They're going to be able to potentially host a regional, and their home field advantage is very good. Don't be surprised to see A&M sneak their way into a super regional or possibly College World Series this year. I've been really impressed with them, and I haven't got to see Asa Lacy pitch as much as I probably should have. I saw him
a little bit tonight.
They just haven't played that marquee team, marquee matchup. They play the same night slot as like Miami and Florida today. So I didn't get. I was much more interested in Miami versus Florida than Texas A&M and Army. But that's definitely an arm and a guy.
Hey, who did you pick to win the Round Rock?
Who did I pick to win Round Rock?
You picked
A&M? No. I took Texas Tech.
Texas Tech. You took Texas Tech. Well, I hate to break it to you. Who did I pick?
Oh, I know exactly where you're going with this. You took Tennessee. I took Texas Tech. And
what happened tonight?
Tennessee put it on Texas Tech tonight.
Yes, sir.
They hit a couple deep long balls. Tennessee.
Inside the Parkers? Two inside the park home runs and then a deep ball to left.
Yeah, I saw the video of the one to left. That was a bomb. But I didn't know they had two inside the Parkers. I was keeping up with the live stats, so obviously I wasn't like watching it because I think it was broadcasted on the new flowsports.com. They're broadcasting like 700 college baseball games this year. They're doing like the $12.99 a month membership. It's like FLO Sports. I'm going to try to get them on as a sponsor. We have some pretty good pull when it comes to college baseball, so maybe they'll be interested in sponsoring us and giving us a free membership or something. But
that'd be clutch.
Yeah,
no, but I just wanted to bring it to you. My balls look good tonight.
Yeah, the Volunteers look
fine. Really good. That they can hit.
Yeah, Tony Vitello, the coach, is one of my favorite coaches in college baseball. Dude, too.
Electric.
I would go to war for that guy, and I've never even talked to him. He just
had that demeanor.
That presence and that demeanor that every player wants to play for.
God, dude, it sounds like he would jump in front of a bullet for his play.
And his interviews after the game are outstanding.
Phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. But, Tennessee with that 6-2 final over Texas Tech. Them boys are looking good to win that Round Rock tournament.
Yeah, I didn't realize this, but I'm pretty sure I counted 5 freshmen in the starting lineup for Texas Tech, which I guess that might be true, but I felt like they returned a lot more than what they did. And so that's a team that I think a lot of people are mad at me, like Texas Tech fans, because I didn't give them any love for the conference preview pick'em podcast we did like early in the year. I said they're going to finish third in the Big 12.
Texas was a good baseball program. I mean, I know it's a soft spot for them, but come on. We know Texas Tech is good. Relax.
Yeah, I picked Texas Tech to finish third in the Big 12, and they definitely got mad and tweeted at me some stuff, but I don't know. I'm just not – I mean, I know they have a really good offense, but I'm just not sold on them yet this year. I was last year. I was a big Texas Tech guy last year. And who knows? Who knows what the season, like, unfolds?
You know who might be in our top 25 Monday?
Who's that?
Tennessee.
Oh, yeah. If they continue to play like this, they're absolutely going to be in the top 25. And that's going to bring probably – how many total SEC teams would that be in our top 25? Maybe 8? 9?
9 or 10, something like that.
The SEC is just – it's
– I mean, literally... hey, don't get me wrong. I think the SEC bias is ridiculous, but what do they do every postseason?
I mean, they show up.
They show up.
I mean, you can count on 3 or 4 SEC teams every year in the College World Series.
I mean,
the
SEC, it just means more.
It just means more, man. And we're not even – you and I aren't even SEC guys.
Nope, I hate the SEC.
I'm not – like, I like watching them play baseball, and I'll watch a SEC football game, but I don't root for a school in the SEC. I don't even root for a school in any major conference. I just kind of like – I enjoy all of college baseball, and I pick players to follow and teams that, you know, I kind of follow and like watching on TV. But, yeah, we're very much not SEC guys. We just – we recognize the talent that they have this year. Hey, I think they're going to end up having at least 4 teams in the College World Series. I really do.
Yeah. I mean, hey, you know what the shame?
Let me bring up this point just real fast, Dimitri. Do you remember last year when the NCAA made the brackets for the regionals and super regionals, how it lined up SEC teams were playing against each other in the Super Regionals, even though, like, the seeding was weighed off. Like, remember they, like, bumped Mississippi or Ole Miss down to, like, a 12 seed when they were supposed to be, like, a 6 just so they can match up with Arkansas, the 5 seed, like, in the Super Regional.
SEC team in Omaha.
Yeah, like, they guaranteed SEC teams in Omaha, but at the same time, they also limited SEC teams, I think, because I think they could have had 6 teams in the top 8. But they, like, I don't know. They manipulated it quite a bit. And I don't know. We'll see this year. But were there any other games we were supposed to talk about? I mean, it's 2 o'clock in the morning over here, so my brain's going 100 different directions. But
no, I think – I mean, we covered a lot. I mean, it wasn't super slow, pretty good. I thought we crushed what we needed to talk about.
Yeah, I think we hit every nail on the head as far as the Friday night guys that really showed up today. There was a lot of strikeouts across the country, and it wasn't because the hitters were bad. It's because this year there's some legitimate arms that, you know, they're too dominant. It's hard to hit. And but yeah, so I mean, between the perfect game today from Bryce Jarvis, we had Reed Detmers, Emerson Hancock, Christian Chamberlain. All those guys had dominant pitching performances, and their teams, for the most part, saw what it took to win on a Friday night, push runs across. But we're going to enjoy the next 2 days. We got a full day of college baseball tomorrow, full day Sunday, and we'll be back Sunday night with recaps of all the weekend series and tournaments going on, and it's gonna be a fun one for sure. So you guys follow us on social media. We've been tweeting out some great stuff. We've been putting a lot of stuff on our Instagram stories. We want to interact with you guys, the listeners and the fans. And we're just a growing media outlet for college baseball fans to kind of give a different player's perspective.
Share with your friend.
Yeah, share with your friends. If you know someone that likes college baseball, tell them to follow me, Dimitri, and 11.7 on Twitter, Instagram, and all that stuff. Check out Foul Pole Sports. They bring a lot of humor to the game, and they have a huge cult following, that's for sure. So check us out on social media. Let us know your thoughts on the episode, and let us know if there's anything you guys wanted us to talk about that we didn't get a chance to. So thank you guys for listening. Review us on the Apple Podcast stores, because those are always big for us.
Give us that 5-star.
Give us that 5-star rating. So you guys have a great weekend, and we'll see you guys Sunday night.
Peace out.